Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's radio show, which is all podcasted, and you can listen to all the back shows. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Today we have editors Jennifer Keltner and Jody Sanders from American Patchwork and Quilting magazine, who have done a full show of tips about organization and using your stash. It is exciting, and they taped it in their studio at the offices, so let's take a listen.
Welcome to the American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. I'm Jennifer Keltner, and I'm here with editor Jody Sanders. And today, Jody, we're going to talk about spring cleaning. It seems like a great time to talk about looking over your stash in your sewing room and your organization and all those things. How much do you love spring cleaning?
Well, I don't know if I love the cleaning part, but I sure know that I need to do it. And I'm really looking forward to some of the tips that we're going to be talking about today. And I think they're really going to be helpful to readers and hopefully a lot of people like us have been quilting a while, and we have those stashes, and we're not quite sure what to do with them. So we're going to learn more about that today.
Excellent. Well, to start out with, we're going to review a topic that is near and dear to the hearts of many a quilter, and that is how to manage your stash. Now, Jody, I don't know if you've ever done this, but certainly I have. I have been caught up at times in the trance in a fabric store, and I come out with a bag full of great fabrics, and I think I know what I'm going to do with them, or maybe I just fell in love with them, and I get them home, and they have time to, let's say, marinate in my drawer for a while or my cupboard, and I pull them out later, and I think, what was I thinking? Does that ever happen to you?
You know, I'm really guilty of buying fabric that I like, so I oftentimes will buy fat quarters or half-yard pieces just because I love a piece of fabric. It doesn't necessarily go with anything else in the bag that I bought that day, and I may come home with a completely unrelated bunch of fabrics, but I buy fabrics all the time just because I love the fabric.
It's an affliction. I share it with you. So what we're going to talk about starting out here today is an article that is called Stash RX, and it's in the June 2014 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting, the one that most of you should have gotten in your mailbox just in the last few weeks or found at newsstands. If you don't have a copy of the June 2014 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting, it is available digitally if you can't find it at your newsstand, and you can go to allpeoplequilt.com/getdigital. to get that digital issue, so you can find out more about what we're talking about today if you're interested. But the premise of this article, we ran the first one, Stash RX article, back in June of 2013, and it was hands down the most popular article I think we've ever gotten response from our readers. And we did it with Designer Weeks Ringle, and the same is true of this year's edition of Stash RX. And the thing is this, Designer Weeks Ringle and her husband and partner Bill Kerr, who are from Modern Quilt Studio, have a class that they teach called Rediscovering Your Stash. And their description of it goes like this: gain color confidence and plan creative ways to use your stash. Mix a big dose of color theory and color exploration with an in-depth discussion of combining patterns and a pinch of working with scale, and you'll end up with a plan for projects that you want to make from the fabrics you already have. And isn't that what we're really about, Jody? Using up the fabrics you have. I always tell people, you don't have to use them to try to clean things out as much as you have to use them to make room for more.
Oh, absolutely. I agree totally.
So Weeks and I got together, and this year we got together at Pennington Quilt Works in Pennington, New Jersey, and I took some fabrics from my stash. And the premise of this article is really to address some typical problems that quilters have in working with their stash. So today, what we'll talk about in this segment and probably into the next one is what some of those prescriptions, as we like to call them, for dealing with your stash issues are, and how understanding really the mechanics behind it in terms of color and combining colors to help you use up fabrics. And my guess is that many of our listeners have the same problems that they're trying to resolve. So let's start out talking about large-scale prints. Jody, do you want to take that?
Yeah, you know, this was really fun for me to read about this in the issue of American Patchwork and Quilting in the June 2014 issue, because I am certainly somebody who loves large florals in particular. I love large-scale prints, but florals in particular. And I think because they're so eye-catching and they just grab you when you walk in the store, oftentimes on the bolts, they're the ones that really stand out, and they're the ones that you gravitate, or at least I gravitate toward, and always seem to take some of those home with me. The first thing that we want to do in looking at large-scale prints is sometimes we get them, though, and we don't know what to do with them. It's like this big, beautiful print, but how do I mix in other pieces with it? And what kind of pieces do I use?
Right. And I think the part of the problem is sometimes when I buy a large-scale print, I'll think it can only go with solids. I mean, what else can you put with this? Because there's so many colors in it, and it's just a riot. So what are the suggestions?
Well, one of the things that you want to take a look at is mixing in maybe some other sizes of prints and other scales. So you don't want to have several large-scale prints all together, because then they're just competing with each other. So you want to look at things that are a different size, a different scale, and also you want to look at value and hue and look at the color itself. What kinds of colors are in those large-scale prints? Sometimes there are a multitude of colors, and sometimes there aren't very many. So really taking a look at the hue and the color and the value that are in those prints is really important as well. One of the things you need to take a look at is the palette. You know, do you need something that's a little lighter in your fabric? If it's a very dark floral, a very dark large print, maybe you need something with a little bit of lightness in it to help break up everything that looks the same. And I think a great tip from Weeks is to avoid the urge to choose fabric or choose a sashing fabric that too closely matches the backgrounds of your prints, or they're going to lose their individual sparkle. You know, you're competing with things, and you really want those large-scale prints to stand out.
And I think it's a lesson that all of us sort of have to learn by trial and error, that variation in hue and color, things don't have to match exactly. I see a lot of people and other quilters in shops who are looking for exactly the same red to match a red print that they have, or exactly the same blue. And that can be challenging to try to do that.
Well, and I think we've talked about that the more interesting quilts are actually those that combine maybe a cranberry red with a more tomato red. You know, having those mix of different colors or different types of colors within the same color range can be really dramatic and really striking. And it kind of keeps your eye moving around rather than seeing kind of the same thing after the same thing. So we do encourage you to give that a try. And then also think about the smallest motif on your large scale print itself. If it's maybe a 3 or 4 inch floral, you know, that should be the smallest size of the patchwork piece that you cut, because if you start cutting those into much smaller pieces, you're losing that detail and you're losing the large scale print that you love to begin with, because you're cutting it into a too small of a piece.
Awesome. Well, those are all great prescriptions for success with using large scale prints. And one of the next things that Weeks and I looked at when we were in the store was really taking a cue from the style of fabric in your stash. We all have fabrics, I'll say, that we gravitate towards. You might be into Civil War reproduction prints, or you might like more modern prints. Even when you have a particular type of fabric that you like, oftentimes you'll find something in your stash that is outside your normal comfort zone or something that you work with. And so we need to take a cue from the style of fabric in finding other things that we can match with it. And one of the next prescriptions we addressed in the article were retro prints. It seems like there's just a plethora of prints that are indicative of maybe the 40s or 50s or, you know, the bigger scale prints maybe than the Nitsy prints of the 1930s, but they seem to be coming back in vogue. And how do you work those into a quilt if you don't have a lot of that in your stash, or you're looking for what else to combine it with? One of the most interesting things that Weeks and I discussed that was new to me is that her discussion about how dyes were able to be used in fabrics back in the 40s and 50s. And the gist of it is this: retro prints now are made to look like they were printed in the same constraints of the fabric printers of that era. So in many cases, 3 or 4 dyes per print were the most that they could manufacture on a print at the time. And so when you're looking to combine things with a retro print, whether it's a new piece of fabric or an old one, look at the number of dies used in the print, and don't combine a retro print that maybe has 3 or 4 dies with a current day print that has 15 or 16 dies, because they look different from one another. And I'm not sure I would have known how to articulate that before discussing it with Weeks, but picking other fabrics in your palette, if you're using a retro print that have a limited number of dies, creates the illusion that they were all printed with the same type of technology in the same era, helping them feel as if they belong together. And the easiest way to do this is to look at the salvage of the fabric, because all of those little dots that you see on the edge, if there are 4 or 5 dots, that's how many dies are used to make that fabric. If there are 14 or 15 dots, that's how many dies were used to make that piece. So I think that's a great tip. And if you look at 1930s prints in the shops, and you know they all look like they go together no matter what the color is, often it's because they look like they were printed in the same area. Another thing that we talked about with retro prints is a lot of the newer retro prints that are being created look or have a lot of white in them as well. And sometimes people think, well, the only way to sash this is to use a lot of white. But sometimes they create problems. If you have white backgrounds on those fabrics or motifs that have a lot of white in them and you cut the edges of it, you can start to look like you're losing your figures. And Weeks calls it the Swiss cheese effect, where you start to have holes where your sashing comes in, where the white in the motif bumps up against the white in the sashing. So think about that if you're adding a solid or a mostly solid or a tone-on-tone sashing pieces to your quilt, that you don't want to create a hole. The other thing is, maybe to create a visual for our podcast listeners, is if you have a polka dot fabric that has white polka dots on a darker background and you put it up against white sashing, you start to get that ticket edge look along the outside of it where the polka dots hit it. And it's not always the most attractive thing. I mean, if that's what you're going for, sure, it's a great solution. But if it's not, those motifs start to dissolve into the adjacent white solid, and maybe there are better choices that you could make. Finally, I think the last thing to think about when you're combining prints such as retro prints is that you're really looking for other fabrics that could converse with them. I love the visual or the idea in my head that fabrics all have a vocabulary to them. And maybe the vocabulary of a particular group of fabrics is that they're fancy or they're intricate and you want to pick other people that go with them. Or maybe they're whimsical and fun and playful and you want to match that vocabulary. Retro prints in particular have sort of a hominess to them, so they go with other homey fabrics, and you don't want to put somebody that's too fancy with them. And I think that's a great visual image that we can all get in our minds before we go to the fabric store or go to our stash and try to figure out how to combine things. So that wraps up our discussion of retro prints. What's next?
Well, let's take a look at working with a specific collection from a designer. We know that there's some really popular designers out there that come out with collections maybe 4 to 6 times a year, and maybe you're a fan of a particular designer and you've accumulated some of those fabrics, and now you're trying to figure out, well, what should I do with them? Or can I mix those in with other things in my stash? And that's one of the things that you and Weeks took a look at too, that typically we have a nice mix and match of a designer collection, but what else can we do with it? And of course you can mix other fabrics in. Sometimes people think, oh no, I just want to have it a single designer print in a quilt. And certainly you can do that, but I think that there's some designers out there whose fabrics just lend to having lots of other things put with them. And I think Kay Fassett is one of those designers. When you say his name, you kind of know what those prints and those particular fabrics look like.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to interrupt you there, Jody. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about designer collections and how we might be able to incorporate them with other things in our stash. And we'll be back in just a moment. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast that you're listening to, and we'll be back shortly.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, Rotary cuts several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. You're back with Jody Sanders and I, and we're talking today about Stash RX, an article from the June 2014 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting magazine, in which we went to a quilt shop with designer Weeks Ringel and talked about ways to use our fabric stash and combine it with other fabrics we already own, a little bit of spring cleaning, as it were, with our sewing rooms, and making the most of the fabrics that we've already invested in. So, Jody, at the break, we were talking about designer collections, and I interrupted you, so I'm going to let you continue on.
Yeah, we were talking, just to recap a little bit before the break, we were talking about how do you mix in other fabrics if you have a particular collection that you have from a designer, because we know most of those collections are very thoughtfully put together by the designers, and they have a big floral, they have a stripe, they have a dot, they have a certain number of different size prints and different colors and different things that they use, design elements to make their collection. So we know those go together. But what do you do when you have, like, maybe you have a fat quarter bundle of those and you've used some of them in a project, but you have three or four extra and you still love those fabrics, but you just didn't incorporate them into your other project for some reason. Well, what do you want to do, or what can you do with those leftover pieces? So we want to talk a little bit about an experiment that you and Weeks did, where you took a large scale floral that was kind of a purple and ochre color. It was mustard and really a beautiful kind of fall-inspired print almost. And how did you put other fabrics together to go with that one particular floral? And one of the things that you did is kind of laid it out there in the quilt shop and got a big look at the fabric as a whole, because particularly with large-scale prints, you really want to take a look at that whole picture and what are all the colors involved and what are some of the design elements. So,
and I think in this particular prescription in the article, one of the most interesting things for me is the way that Weeks lays out for you her thought process of moving through fabrics and combining things. And we probably had maybe 8 to 10 fabrics that we started with that were stash fabrics. And she was working on a project with these. And we added another dozen or so while we were at the shop. And a lot of the ones that she started with were Kay Fawcett prints, but she added a variety of things to it and was really able to articulate how she added those fabrics one at a time and step through it. And so in the article, you'll find 22 different fabrics that are showcased as a part of this quilt. So a super scrappy quilt when it was finished, and her thought process of how adding every piece along the way went. So for example, I'll read you just a couple of the lines, you know, from fabric 8 that she added. A smaller scale print injects high contrast. While it includes ochre, one of the original colors, it also works red into the palette. So she explains how she introduces new colors that weren't in the existing multicolor print. She also explains how repeating things multiple times is important. If you have a stripe once, you might want to have it at least 3 times in a palette. And ways that repetitive inclusion of fabrics makes for a more interesting quilt.
Well, and I think in addition to the different motifs, or whether you have a stripe or a small scale print or whatever it might be, I think it's also the styles. I know for me, I like Civil War reproduction. I also love batiks. And so I think a few years ago, people thought that that was really unusual, that that would be kind of my two fabric. They seem like they're on the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of fabrics and the kinds of quilts that people like to make. But I think, you know, we've got designers out there now that have been mixing batiks and Civil War reproduction. And the quilts are beautiful. They're gorgeous. And I started doing that with some of the quilts that I've been making, and I just love the effect. It's kind of that yin and yang of the old and the new, and I think they just really play off each other really, really nicely.
Right. I love that the old rules have been thrown out, and now the new rule is there are no rules.
Exactly. I think that's right. And that, and you know, the quilt police from there, we, you know, I think people just are so free right now to mix and match and do, and not only cottons and batiks, but we see things like corduroys and velvets and voiles and things like that that are included in quilts too. And I think that that's really exciting and really interesting to
right.
have those kinds of fabrics all mixed together.
And we'll have more on that subject coming up. But for those of you who don't yet have a copy of the June issue, you can also go to allpeoplequilt.com/912, the numbers 912, and see a picture of the quilt top that uses the fabrics we were just talking about for working with a designer collection. And that might also spark some interest and some ideas. So the next prescription in the article dealt with monochromatic prints. And I, for one, used to find it difficult to do a monochromatic quilt. And it's often been said that blue is America's favorite color. And whether your favorite color is blue or another hue, most quilters do tend to stock up on their own favorite color. But how do you combine monochromatic prints into a quilt that isn't boring? Well, here was the Stash Doctor's secrets. Week says, in a one-color quilt, you want a smooth transition in value. Assuming you're using the variety of prints for equal purposes in a finished quilt, think about the changes in value like stair steps, going from 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 to 8. Now, sounds simple, but what often happens is people fall in love with one end of the range and ignore the other and end up with a value range that goes from 4 to 4.5 to 4.75 to 5 to 8. And that sort of stair stepping can result in a quilt that falls flat when you look at the colors. And I know certainly this is reflective of me. I tend to shop for very saturated, anything from the mid-range to the dark end, and I ignore lights completely. And I know that about myself, and yet when I come home and unpack my bag of fabrics or look at the stash in my sewing room, I still look at it, and it's all mediums to darks and very little light. So here are a couple tips she has to tune your value judgment and eliminate the outliers. Consider that value is easier to see from a distance. So order your fabrics from light to dark, and first glance at your fabrics close up, then move back 10 feet to review them. If you wear glasses, which I'm lucky enough to, take them off and you'll avoid being distracted by the prints. You know, for those of you who, like me, wear glasses, you take it off and things sort of blur out. Then you're not so worried if it's a flower or a, you know, animal motif or some other print on there. You're really just seeing the value in the fabrics. The other thing you can do is take a photograph of your stair-stepped fabrics and view them from a picture on your phone, or, you know, if you can look at it on an iPad or a larger thing. I think it's also amazing, don't you find, Jody, when we take flat shots of quilts in the magazine, how different they look than they look when we're holding them.
And I think not only taking a look at that picture, but take a look at the picture as a black and white picture. Whether you have access to a photocopier machine or your camera gives you the ability to look at your photograph as a black and white photograph, you can really see the light from the dark if you look at it in kind of a grayscale or black and white.
Exactly. Well, let's move on and talk about an RX that we have for drab and bright prints. And I think, again, Kay Fawcett prints come to mind when you think about drabs and brights, because he maybe does a better job than most of mixing things where there's an olivey color up against a hot pink or a fuchsia shade. So what can you tell us about those kind of prints, Jody?
The thing I love is Weeks's quilt that says, I like to think of this as sweet and salty. And I think that's just the great combination, again, of kind of the sweet, the salty. The opposing nature of bright and drab is counterintuitive to most of us. Again, the sweet and salty, the opposites attract kind of thing. We're going to take a look at her solution for kind of mixing those drab and bright prints. And, you know, to determine, let's say, for example, you're trying to figure out what kind of background do I use with all of these? Well, you can actually take your fabrics and lay them out, put that background fabric down, and then go ahead and place your two or three options out there. And you can really get a better sense of, oh yeah, this one really works or this one doesn't work. And sometimes we call that auditioning fabric, where you just get things out and try them before you actually start cutting pieces and putting things together. Actually audition them first before you start cutting into anything.
And I know a tip I got one time from designer Jean Wells was, she keeps a roll of like 6-inch strips in a variety of colors that she's considering for using as borders or sashing, and just has that roll in her sewing room all the time and can lay it out. So if she wants to decide, you know, should this be a hot pink background or should this be a linen colored background, she can lay those strips out in between the fabrics or the blocks that she's looking at. And it's pretty an easy decision once you see it laid out. When you're trying to just picture it in your mind, it can be difficult to visualize what that's going to look like. But even if you have a 6-inch strip of fabric and can lay your fabric up next to it, then really some things become much more clear when you have actual fabric swatches to play with.
Well, and again, I think you always have to have brights with brights, and that's not the case. You can pair brights with drabs and they look wonderful together. The contrast of the drab colors sometimes provide that nice juxtaposition where not every fabric is screaming for attention. So having those drab fabrics in there with the bright and exciting ones, they really, again, the sweet and salty, the opposites attract kind of thing, I think is really helpful. The more variety you have in prints, the easier it is to lay everything out in a quilt top, so you don't have to worry about what kind of fabrics are next to each other. And the prime example of this is a Weeks and Bill quilt that was featured in American Patchwork and Quilting in February 2012. And that was Fabric Fusion. And I think just the title says it all, where they fused all these different kinds and styles and colors of prints together. And that pattern for that is available on apqshop.com. And again, that's Fabric Fusion by Weeks Ringel and Bill Kerr, and that was in the American Patchwork and Quilting February 2012 issue.
Right, and I remember that quilt, and it was so interesting because it mixed Amy Butler fabrics with Joe Morton fabrics and some Thimbleberries things in the mix. It was such a crazy mix that if you had told me, you know, I've got a plan for a quilt, Jody, and here's what it's going to be. We're going to use 50 different fabrics, and they're going to be from designers from current day to, you know, country and traditional and modern. I wouldn't have believed that it could have worked. And then seeing it all come together in that quilt was really amazing. So I would encourage people to go take a look at the Fabric Fusion pattern. We have a little bit more to talk about with Stash RX, but we're in need of a break, so we're going to take a quick time out here. I hope you'll return to hear the rest of the American Patchwork and Quilting podcast with us today. We're talking about spring cleaning and ways to straighten up your stash and organize your sewing room. We'll be back in just a moment.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. If you're working on more than one quilt project at a time and have limited storage space, stash each ongoing project in a large white gift box. Label the ends, and stack the boxes in your closet.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. Today, Jody Sanders and I are talking about Stash RX, an article that appeared in the June 2014 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. And we've got a couple more prescriptions we want to wrap up for success in using your stash fabrics. And then we're going to launch into organization. So, Jody, we touched on this before the break. You were talking a little bit about mixing fabrics, and that was one of the discussions that Weeks and I had in the quilt shop.
Right. It's no longer, you know, a rule anymore that you have to have all 100% cotton prints with 100% cotton prints in your quilt. You can mix them up with some batiks or some ICATs, maybe some linen that you have. So there's really beautiful fine wool corduroy out there. It's just really interesting. I keep thinking every time we go to quilt market, how are the fabrics going to be more interesting and more beautiful? And every year they just come out with more and more wonderful fabrics for us to use in our quilts and our garments and the objects that we make. So you and Weeks, when you were doing this article, that was one of the things that you looked at, is how do we mix different kinds of fabric genres in a quilt? And so again, kind of laying things out there and deciding the little bits and pieces that you want to include. Some of them may have larger pieces and smaller pieces. One of the things that we talked a little bit about is laundering those different kinds of fabrics and if there's different shrinkage values. For example, we know flannel tends to shrink a little more, or if you want to get some sizing out of something, that if you're going to put all of those quilt or all those fabrics in the same quilt, you probably want to make sure that they're all pre-washed. And then at some point, you know that when you wash that quilt, they've all been pre-washed, the shrinkage is all going to be the same, and you don't have to worry about maybe some puckering or something happening at some point. So that is one of the things that you will want to take a look at and maybe think about as you're putting your pieces together, is if you need to do some pre-washing, that's probably a good idea.
All right. Well, that's great advice for combining different genres of fabric in a particular quilt. And we're going to wrap up this segment by talking about something that, again, is often found in many a quilter's stash, and that is the dreaded and well-loved, I guess, both, multicolor prints. And combining colors can be a tough task for some quilters, but beginning with a multicolor print can make it even more challenging because, you know, what direction do you take it in? Does anything go, or is there something that you can use to rule colors in or out? And we shared some sound advice for tackling this stash symptom. The multicolor print that we started with from my stash had sort of an olive green background, and then it had white and gold and rust and dark brown rings on the fabric. And that is really what presents a challenge because it doesn't fall into a typical light or dark category. Depending on which element in the fabric you're looking at, it could be considered light or dark. And so where do you go with that? And to begin, what Weeks said was she looks at the fabric's background. And in this case, it was sort of a desaturated olive green background. And she used that to either add or rule out other stash fabrics. So the first things that were excluded were things that were too limey green or too dark and sort of evergreen color. Then she sorted the fabrics into a couple of rows and tried to look at finding at least one color to match the rings that were in the print and add a second multicolor element. So when introducing new colors, think about it this way. If a fabric has five colors in it, as the one that I started with, the multicolor print did, if a fabric has five colors, you don't need new fabrics that you introduce to the palette to include all five of those colors. And I think that's sometimes the trap we get caught in. We go looking for an olive green print that also has rust and dark brown and white and yellow. And it's hard. It's impossible to find it. Or if it does, the mood might not suit it. But you need to relate to at least one of those colors. So to begin with, in this ring print, if you repeated the olive background, but you picked a print that had olive and maybe a hint of blue in it, then you can introduce blue into the palette, but the olive is sort of the one that ties it together. Then if you have something that has an olive and a yellow and a brown in it, but also repeats the blue, you add that second blue element in and you're on your way to having things appear three times across the entire quilt top. So every time you add something, Think about it, sort of lining your fabrics up in an adjacency and being able to tell the story about it. This fabric had this color in it, and so I picked this one because it repeats that color and it brings in a new one. Then the third fabric repeats the new color, but also has two colors that repeat to the original fabric. That's the progression that Weeks looks for when she's adding fabrics. And to her, she says it's like building a bridge from one piece to the next, always identifying the common elements that link them together. And I think too often in the quilt shop, that's where we fall apart. We sort of just grab the fabrics we love, but we don't know what links them together. And lining them up on the counter, whether you stack the bolts up and are looking at them vertically or horizontally, I think is a helpful thing. Also, in thinking about sashing, when you get into sort of that yellow-green family and you think, well, what goes with this? I think something people forget is that that green has a lot of yellow in it, and the darkest value of yellow is brown, which often works perfectly when you get into that yellow-green mix and you're auditioning sashing colors. Think also about what we talked about at the beginning. You don't want sashing in your project that has too smooth a transition from the patchwork pieces. You want sashing to read clearly as something other than the pieced work in a finished quilt. And the reason for that is you go to all the trouble to piece your blocks and to do that patchwork, and it's a shame if it doesn't show off in the final project, because after all, that's what quilting is about. To wrap up the sash, Stash RX story, I'll finish with a quote from Weeks. And again, this has to do with making the very best quilts you can from the stash fabrics. And sometimes we worry that we don't have enough of something. We only have a little bit of one thing in our stash and we want to still use it. And she says, don't assume you have to use all the fabrics in the same proportion. You can change the look and feel of an entire project by choosing to use just a small amount of lights or darks in your palette to mix it up. So if you have the June issue of American Patchwork and Quilting for 2014, for sure you'll want to pull it out and review the Stash RX article in conjunction with what we talked about here today. If you don't have it, you can find it at newsstands, at independent quilt shops, and also a digital version is available at allpeoplequilt.com, get digital. If you have your June 2013 issue, you can find the original Stash RX article, but if you've missed it, you can also go to allpeoplequilt.com/904, and at 904 you will find the original Stash RX article and some more lessons that Weeks shares. In that June issue for this year, though, don't forget to look through, because all of the fabrics that we chose for this article and garnered from stash fabrics and mixing in some new ones are also utilized in color options in the issue. So there are 7 different versions of color options made using the fabrics that we talked about for these common problems that people have with their stash, and we can show you real life examples of how we put them to use making color options. So that's a wrap on the Stash RX article, and I hope you found some interesting information there. But we're not done with our spring cleaning, because we're going to launch next into a discussion of some great organization tips. And we were able to do a profile story that you'll see coming up in the August 2014 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting at designer Jill Finley's studio. And I think that we have some great tips for you to share. Jill has one of those studios that all of us, I think most of us, dream about going into. It really was such a magical space, but even I was amazed at all the little tips and tricks she had for organizing her fabric. So Jody, let's start talking about that next.
Jill's studio is well organized and filled with a vibrant mix of fabrics, notions, and quilts. And her studio space is where all of her designs start to take shape. Natural light is in abundance, and it was a requirement when she was designing the space. She has windows up high and a couple of sides of the studio itself, and the amount of natural light that she has is just amazing to be able to see outside as well as to have that light coming in. And I think one of the things, we've got some tips from Jill about storage in her studio, and one of my favorite things is the collection of candy jars that she has, or clear glass jars, I guess. And she's got buttons, she's got thread, she's got trims, and the nice thing about it is they're in glass jars, so you can see what she has stored in each of those. And also, they're not all the same. They're not all matchy-matchy lined up They're tall and slender. They're short and squatty. But it's just a really eclectic mix of beautiful glass jars. And that's where she stores some of her items so that she can see them. And another fun thing she does is during the holidays, she swaps out the notions for old-fashioned Christmas candies. And that makes a really fun decorating thing at the holiday time.
I think it's great. And what I like about them is they all have lids on them as well. So she doesn't have to worry about dust and things getting inside. It really makes for a neat display. And I love an artful display because my habit tends to be to buy something and then stick it in a drawer or stick it in a bin. And I don't know what I have. So the glass jar thing was really a great tip. The other thing Jill does is she was on the hunt. Many of us use plastic bins or plastic tubs to store our fabric in. And she wanted something that would really elevate it a notch because she wanted her fabrics to be easy at hand. And she's got a bookcase along a wall that has sort of extra deep shelves. And as she said, she has these great wire baskets that kind of reminded me of locker baskets that you could find at you know, a lot of discount or major stores now. They're available, but she found them at a grocery store in her area. And what was really cool about these locker style baskets was that they gave her sort of a uniform look to her sewing room. She lines them up neatly on shelves, and then she folds the fabric so that the one in the front of the wire basket that you can really see full face on, she sort of did a color blocking thing where she folded that fabric neatly in the front, and maybe all the other ones weren't so neatly lined up, but the front of them was very well organized, and it gave a sort of calmness to the display instead of looking like, you know, sort of cloudy plastic tubs where you can see 50 fabrics in the front of it. She was deliberate about her placement of that front fabric and filling up the front of the wire basket so that it gave a very neat appearance to the room overall. And I think that that's something that a lot of times we don't think about. We just think about the volume of fabric we have and the fastest way to store the most of it. But if you can display it artfully, and I mean, she had a lot of baskets and a lot of fabric, so it wasn't that she was skimping on the amount of fabric, not by any means. She was just displaying it a little more artfully than maybe I have. And I know that we have some more tips coming up, but we do have to take another break. So after the break, we'll come back. We have a few more tips from Jill Finley's Sewing Studio that we're going to share with you. And then we'll wrap up today's program with more organizing and storage tips so that you can finish your spring cleaning. I hope you're enjoying American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. We'll be back in a moment.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once fabric pieces have been pressed, let them cool in place before moving them. It prevents distortion of bias edges.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. I'm Jennifer here with editor Jody Sanders, and we're talking about spring cleaning. And at the end of the last segment, we started talking about designer Jill Finley of Jalili Studio and her ideas that she puts to use for organizing her sewing studio space. And Jody, let's kick it off with another great tip from Jill. Now, I will say this article about Jill Finley will appear in the August 2014 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting. So look for a profile story of Jill, and you can see pictures of all the things we're talking about today and pictures of her studio, which is terrific. But Jody, let's share another tip from Jill.
Well, I love gadgets and tools, and in particular rulers, and I like different sizes and different shapes. And the one thing that I'm kind of guilty of is I kind of just set them aside and they're in different places, and I don't have a very good storage system for all of my rulers. So I love what Jill does, and she uses 3M Command brand wire hooks, and the rulers hang from the wire part of the hook there. It's got a little knob on it, and they're repositionable, which is great because you can accommodate different ruler sizes, different widths. You can move them around, and if you need to change out rulers, they're very easy to take the command strips off the wall and then put them in different places. They're right across from her cutting table, so they're easily seen. She can get access to them very easily, and she always knows what she has, and it's very well organized. I love how she's done this.
And I adopted this in my own sewing room after seeing these pictures of Jill's studio, and I will say 3M makes a variety of hooks. Some of them have a larger end to them. They're made to hold bags or robes or things like that. So you really want to look for the ones that have the wire hook on them because they're small enough to fit through the hole that's already punched in your ruler. And it's great because they come in white, they come in clear. I mean, they're virtually indetectable on the wall, but it's so easy to have your rulers right there when you want them. And I'm also guilty of sort of piling them up and then they get warped or they get misshapen. Whereas if they're flat against the wall, you know, they're safe, they're secure, and they hang flat. The other idea that I loved when I got to see her studio is, I don't know about your sewing space, but when you have a limited space, I always seem to be moving my ironing board out of the way and pushing it from one side of the room to the next. I've never found exactly the right space. Well, Jill sort of did a double duty take on an ironing board in her space. And so she's got a bookcase that's filled with all of her sewing and quilting books in it. And she added a fabric and batting covered board atop of this bookcase and put the bookcase on wheels. So, you know, at IKEA or at hardware stores, you can sometimes buy sets of wheels that would go on the bottom of things. She did that and added those wheels to the bottom of the bookcase and then covered a board with fabric and batting and put it on top. And now she's got this mobile cutting station or mobile ironing station that she can move around the room wherever she wants it. It's never in her way. She's not scratching up the floor because it's on wheels and it's able to be moved easily. It was a fantastic way to incorporate and make an ironing board space not wasted space, because usually under the ironing board is nothing but those crisscross bars that are meant to trip up your animals and anything that you drop, or that's my experience anyway.
Another thing that Jill has in her studio is a side table, and it's in the sewing room. It provides ample space for her collection of her ribbons, and she sometimes uses these as quilt embellishments. It also is a place that you could wrap gifts, but it's just a wonderful place, a flat surface that sometimes we seem to fill with other things, but she's got this wonderful flat surface and an area where these ribbons can be hung on a dowel. She's got a couple different levels there, and you can hang your ribbons there, and then they're easily accessible. Sometimes with me and my ribbons, I just throw them in a box and then I'm digging through trying to figure out which one I want to use, and they get all tangled up. And she's got a really great system for having the ribbons on one long dowel, and then she can just get off the length that she needs, snip it off, and then it's all right there visible, and she can visualize which one she wants to use
and
at that particular time.
Right, not if filling a bin with ribbon and then digging through them, which I've known people who've done that, maybe me.
Me too. Guilty.
And if you're fortunate enough to be able to plan your own sewing space and really make it the dream sewing space you want, as Jill did, the last idea we'll share with you from her studio is one that she built a window seat into her sewing studio, in a place where she can display some of the pillows that she's made or sit and look out the window. But what I loved most about it was the hidden storage aspect that she incorporated in. She really was very thoughtful in planning her studio and decided that no space would go unused. And so if you lift up the seat to her window seat, underneath is where she houses her batting. And there's nothing really very attractive about batting rolled up in your sewing room, and we're all forever looking for a place to keep it clean and out of the way and not have to look at it. And usually it's up high or down low under the bed or those kinds of things. But she designed it so the window seat, when you lift it up, you would never know it. But lift up the little cushion that she has on it and the wood, and underneath she's got a great place to store batting. So when you get to design your custom space, all you listeners, remember to do that with your window seat, because I thought it was a terrific idea. So those are a few things from the designer profile coming in August 2014 in American Patchwork and Quilting. And you can see more of Jill's home and studio and an exclusive design from her in that issue as well. And that will be on sale in early June. So watch for that at newsstands or in your mailbox. And to balance out the rest of today's show, we're going to share with you some more organizing tips that are from allpeoplequilt.com. And if you're looking for more organization tips after the show today, you can do a keyword search at allpeoplequilt.com for organization and find even more great tips. But Jody, let's bring it on home here for spring cleaning with some more organizing ideas. What have you got to share?
Well, for stashing your notions, things like thread, your seam ripper, small scissors, maybe some of your marking pencils, a rotary cutter, blades. Sometimes, again, those things just get thrown in a bin or a basket, and it, you know, you're digging through trying to find the item that you need. But a great way of kind of separating those items out is to use a flatware divider that you can find at stores. And those can come in wood or plastic, and it's similar to what you would use to separate your silverware. And so you've got maybe four compartments, three compartments, five compartments, depending on the divider. And it's a great way to separate out your threads from your seam rippers, from your marking pencils, and they'll always be within reach, but they're not going to roll off the table because they're contained in that particular divider.
That's a great idea. Another one, we talked a little bit earlier in Jill's studio about giant candy jars filled with notions and things like that, but maybe you don't have quite as plentiful a supply of notions, or maybe you have a lot of small things and you don't want to mix all your buttons into one thing. You want to put them and sort them by color or by size or shape or beads, all those kinds of embellishment things. So consider using a spice rack with little glass jars on it that are kind of the size, I think, of old baby food jars or even smaller, where if you just have a few of something but you want to keep them safe and secure and you don't want to pile them all in together, a spice rack can be a great way to house those little things. And they come in a variety of things. You can find one that stands on top of a shelf if you have sort of shelf storage space. You can find ones that hang on the wall if you have more wall space than countertop. So there are options there as well. You can find the one that fits your needs perfectly.
I love to go on quilting retreats, and Jennifer, I know you like to do that too. One of the things that I've incorporated into my quilt retreating system lately has been to take a simple storage container of a toolbox. And so you just go to any big box store or hardware store and you find a toolbox. And then in the toolbox, you can put in and separate all of your notions. So again, thread, buttons, a scissor. The toolbox has got lots of nice separated compartments. Sometimes it's multi-level, and so you may have a couple of different levels, the smaller compartments on top, and then a tray that removes where you can put some of your larger items on the bottom. And it's funny because this, probably 4 or 5 years ago, a couple gals came with these toolboxes to retreat, and of course everyone loved the idea and then wanted to know where they got them and went home after the retreat and went to the store and started buying them themselves. And finally, one of the salespeople at the store said, you know, what's going on? We've had a lot of women in lately buying these toolboxes, and it wasn't close to Father's Day. It wasn't for their husbands. No, it was for them, and they were using it as their retreat boxes. And actually, their boxes, I keep mine aside. I don't ever empty it out. It's just the box, the toolbox that I use with all the things I need in it to go to my retreat. And I just know if I need something replaced that I can replace it. But they're not the regular tools that I use. They're all tools just for retreat.
That's a great idea. So you don't ever get to retreat and say, oh, I wish I'd packed this. Or in my case, you know, an hour before you're leaving, you're running around like a mad woman trying to scramble all the things you need that you know you have, but you don't know where you put. I have another idea that I sometimes use when I'm going on retreat, and that is to use a three-ring notebook. And one with D-rings, like a D-ring binder, and keeping track of smaller templates or specialty rulers that you have. This is one that you might need to wait till it's closer to back to school time if you don't have a good office supply store or school supply store. But they make zippered pencil bags that go into notebooks for kids and have a clear, like a cello side to them so that you can see what's in them. And if you've got a lot of little pieces that you're worried about keeping organized, or you're working on a project, I sometimes like to cut out applique templates ahead of time and get them all cut out because I don't enjoy that part of the process as much. But I don't want to lose them. Once I've taken the time to trace them and get them cut out, I want to keep them safe and secure. So putting them in those little zippered pouches in a D-ring notebook, it keeps them all sturdy and safe and protected.
I love to make pincushions, and I also like to collect pincushions, and I've also been known to receive some really wonderful pin cushions from some of my quilting and sewing friends. But the problem is my collection now has gotten to be pretty big. And rather than just having them sit all along the top of a bookcase, what I've done is to have a pretty pedestal that you can keep your pin cushions on. So you could get like a cake plate that may have two or three layers. It's just a really pretty way to display. And then they're not just lined all up. You can keep it on the counter. You can hide it if you don't want to have it out. But it's really a great way to corral all of those pin cushions and keep the workspace neat, but also be able to see them and enjoy them and remember the people that gave them to you.
Make them into little works of art. I love it. Well, Jody, thanks so much for sharing your tips for organization here and talking with me about Weeks and the Stash RX article in the June issue of American Patchwork and Quilting. Tips from designer Jill Finley that will appear in the August issue. It's been a great time to talk about spring cleaning. I don't know about you, but I'm inspired to go back into my sewing room and to straighten things up one more time. I'm always going to do better, and I hope that for our listeners, they found ideas that they can incorporate into their own sewing space. It's always great to have a handle on what you have and where it is, and maybe these ideas will help you use more of what you have more efficiently. Next week, our Pat Sloan will be back to talk with you more, but thanks for joining us today on American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. We hope you have enjoyed the day.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.